Hello and welcome to Right Through Now, the podcast that helps you stay connected with international news, science and technology, fun stuff that's going on in the world. All right, today we begin with the whitest ever paint that could help cool the heating earth, study shows. So a new paint that reflects 98% of sunlight as well as radiating infrared heat into space, which reduces the need for air conditioning, has been developed. The whitest ever paint has been produced by academic researchers with the aim of boosting the cooling of buildings and tackling the climate crisis. The new paint reflects 98% of sunlight as well as radiating infrared heat through the atmosphere into space. In tests, it cools surfaces by 4.5 degrees Celsius below the ambient temperature, even in strong sunlight. The researchers said the paint could be on the market in 1 or 2 years. That's actually really, really encouraging. There's also, of course, the blackest of black paints, which is just, among other things, really, really cool. But not literally, not in this context at least, because, yes, we all know black stuff absorbs heat, white stuff reflects it. So this is going to be pretty interesting, and especially the wide scale adaptation of this stuff into like household roof paint or whatever. That's going to be really interesting. There have been studies in the past that basically painted entire stretches of road white. And the effort was that, you know, ultimately it's going to, because most of these tarmac surfaces are really dark, either darker shades of gray or more or less totally black. Not Vanta black, but still very black. And I don't think that study really went anywhere. I don't see a lot of roads that have been painted white. So, but the thing is that this sort of stuff has like cumulative benefits, and you know, the benefits continue adding up to something that is pretty significant. Because, like, let's say, for instance, you paint the roof of your home white, this shade of white, and ultimately that reduces the air temperature and reduces the ambient temperature inside the house. So that means people inside are going to be more comfortable and they're going to rely on air conditioning a little bit less. And since most of the world is not using renewable energy in the first place, that means fewer coal plants need to get fired and fewer emissions that way as well. So it's all around a good thing. Let's see how rapidly it gets adapted in the world. All right, so in Fukushima, Japan has approved releasing wastewater into the ocean. This is something that has been debated quite a bit, and let's just hope it doesn't give rise to another Godzilla. Japan has approved a plan to release more than 1 million tons of contaminated water from the destroyed Fukushima nuclear plant into the sea. The water will be treated and diluted so radiation levels are below those set for drinking water. But the local fishing industry has strongly opposed the move, as have China and South Korea. Tokyo says work to release water used to cool nuclear fuel will begin in about 2 years. The final approval comes after years of debate and is expected to take decades to complete. Reactor buildings at the Fukushima power plant were damaged by hydrogen explosions caused by an earthquake and tsunami in 2011. The tsunami knocked out the cooling systems to the reactors, three of which melted down. More than 1 million tons of water have been used to cool the melted reactors. Yeah, that's going to be scary. I mean, there's just so much more new information coming in about seas and about the way in which we're damaging the seas and the ocean life. There's a new documentary called Seaspiracy as well. It's on Netflix. And it's getting mixed reviews. A lot of people are saying, you know, that there is an unfair criticism of the fishing industry there. But how long can this stuff be ignored? All right, so it's now been 60 years since the first man went into space. Yuri Gagarin, what a badass. I mean, just think about what it means to be the first human being to enter space. That's baller. That's just, you cannot be cooler. So for the USSR, Yuri Gagarin's single orbit of the Earth was a huge achievement and propaganda coup. There will be celebrations across Russia to mark the anniversary. Well, I think this is something that while most of these attempts to do stuff related to space were fueled by the Cold War, fueled by the predecessors of the Cold War, and just trying to get ahead of any other potential superpower in the world, I think more than that, it became a symbol of what humankind could achieve. And that's the thing we should take away from it, I think, fundamentally. It pays to remember that a lot of stuff related to space still comes from that fierce competition between nations, which in some forms is kind of unnecessary because we're one people. But hardly anybody believes that. So, we got to go to space. Okay. First flight of NASA's Mars helicopter Ingenuity is delayed. Well, this is kind of unfortunate, but when you hear the reasons, you'll find that this is reasonable. Because I've been waiting for this for a long time. NASA had originally aimed to conduct the first Red Planet flight of its Ingenuity helicopter, the first ever powered flight on a world beyond Earth, on Sunday, April 11th. A high-speed rotor spinning test on Friday did not go as planned, but however, pushing the debut back until Wednesday at the earliest. Now, after analyzing the issue over the weekend, the Ingenuity team has concluded that minor modification and reinstallation of Ingenuity's flight control software is the most robust path forward. Officials at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Southern California, which manages Ingenuity's technology demonstrating mission, wrote in an update. Our best estimate of a targeted flight date is fluid right now, but we're working towards achieving these milestones and will set a flight date next week, NASA officials wrote in the update. I'm going to keep you posted because this is something that I'm really, really interested in. So we'll see. All right. Mercedes-Benz finally allows a full look at the 2022 EQS luxury electric sedan. And it's two-tone? Mercedes-Benz finally pulled the camouflage off of its 2022 EQS electric sedan, and the two-tone paint job is sure to raise some interesting questions. The German automaker is still keeping several key details under wraps, such as the pricing, but the EQS is a bold break from the current crop of minimalistic electric vehicles with its big battery, huge infotainment screen, and richly appointed interior. When it arrives at dealerships in the fall of 2021, the EQS will be the first long-range EV from Mercedes available to buy in the US, beating out the EQC compact SUV, which has been delayed indefinitely. I think it looks cool. I really do. I mean, the interiors look nice, the outdoors, it looks civilized. And that's, of course, not the first thing that comes to mind when you think of an American car. So maybe it's market-specific. Maybe Europe adapts the 2022 EQS a lot more because it's just, yeah. I mean, it sounds perverted to say this, but yeah, I can totally see that. I always heard it in auto shows and stuff like that, that, you know, the automotive culture of the US, there is a certain element of vulgarity in, you know, the muscle cars, the Corvettes, the Mustangs and stuff like that. And on the other hand, in Europe, there's a quiet dignity where you almost don't want to tell people what car you have. The strangest thing here, to me anyway, is the fact that when you get your brand new car, you can usually ask the dealer to remove the model name of your car, the variant of your car. And that's like the opposite of what the whole world does. The whole world tries to, you know, oversell their stuff. Oh, it's a BMW M series car, even if it's like a 3 series, like a bog standard one. Here, the culture is kind of the opposite, which is really interesting. And I feel like the new adventures by Mercedes-Benz are a step in that direction, which is, I mean, of course, it's no surprise, right? All right, space junk removal is not going smoothly. Despite promising technology demonstrations, there is no one-size-fits-all solution for the growing problem of taking out the orbital trash. If you don't know what space junk is, it's basically debris from so many different missions that have been sent into space, and ultimately, you know, things break up, satellites break up, different stages of rockets break up, and some of that stuff falls back onto the planet, burns up into the atmosphere, and problem solved. But a lot of this stuff doesn't, and now there are millions of pieces of shrapnel just floating around. Well, not really floating, but rather orbiting. And that's pretty dangerous because if you ever want to send another mission to space, then you have to kind of circumvent and dodge these literal bullets because, yeah, I mean, thousands of kilometers per hour is more or less the average speed of something that's up there, around there, spinning around the Earth. And even if it's something as tiny as a pebble, you know, it can basically have a catastrophic impact on whatever mission you're trying to achieve. A space-age tragedy of commons is unfolding right under our nose, or really, right over our head, and no consensus yet exists on how to stop it. After so many decades of the buildup of high-speed clutter in the form of spent rocket stages, stray bolts and paint chips, solid rocket motor slag, dead or dying satellites, and the scattered fragments of anti-satellite tests, all of which could individually damage or destroy other assets, low Earth orbit is finally on the verge of becoming too crowded for comfort. And the problem is now poised to get much worse because of the rise of satellite mega constellations requiring thousands of spacecraft, such as SpaceX's Starlink, a broadband internet network. Starlink is but one of many similar projects. Another mega constellation from a company called OneWeb is already being deployed, and Amazon's Project Kuiper is seeking to create a mega constellation of up to 3,200 satellites in the near future. As the congestion has grown, so too have close calls between orbiting assets. The International Space Station, for instance, regularly tweaks its orbit to avoid potentially hazardous debris. Worse yet, there has been an uptick in the threat of full-on collisions that generate menacing refuse that exacerbates the already bad situation. This is terrifying. It's terrifying that this stuff is going on. And we just go on in our lives not thinking about it. And meanwhile, our future as an interplanetary species is constantly more and more under threat. But what do I know? Could psilocybin help clinicians treat depression? Short answer is yes. But let's see what the BBC has to say about this. Psilocybin, a psychedelic drug found in magic mushrooms, is as effective at reducing symptoms of depression as conventional treatment. A small early-stage trial of 59 people has found. Those taking part in Imperial College London's Centre for Psychedelic Research trial were given either psilocybin or a common antidepressant called a selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor, which is SSRI. More research needs to be conducted in the future, psilocybin could be added to the toolkit that clinicians use to treat depression. I mean, I'm kind of happy that finally the world is waking up to the potential of psychedelic substances and the benefit of psychedelic substances without, you know, totally having a blanket perspective on this. The war on drugs has failed because it was the wrong war to have fought. And most of the world is under a spell cast by some people in the USA who said, you know, psychedelics are the absolute worst. People who are on psychedelics rape everybody, loot everybody, and all that dumb shit. But unfortunately, that is the reality that spread to the whole world. And for the past 100 years or so, we've been extremely stupid about psychedelics. So I hope that there is a future where more and more countries wake up to the actual reality of things. I mean, if it weren't for psychedelics, probably no religion would exist. Okay, what else is going on? All right, so Facebook reaches its target of using 100% renewable energy. I mean, this is kind of odd, right? Good news involving Facebook. I think they're at the same time kind of desperately trying to project some good news, because most of the shit that's coming from Facebook is pretty depressing, to be honest. Facebook says it has reached its target to power its global operations entirely on renewable energy. The company is now focusing its efforts on the broader goal of reaching net zero emissions across its entire value chain by 2030, including suppliers and business activities like travel and employee commuting. Well, that's good. What about the data of millions of people that got lost and stolen? Maybe we answer that in the next episode. All right. Well, thank you so very much for staying tuned in. And see you next time. Ciao.